Yeah. So servant leadership, I think, like in our world, for me, is showing up as an employee versus a shareholder, and that I have a job to do every day and I'm contributing to the team as one part of the whole.
Building a company from nothing is freaking hard. Us entrepreneurs are expected to deal with unimaginable challenges and somehow keep a cool head through it all. This is The Art of Entrepreneurship, and I'm your host, Jackie Hermes. I grew my company, Excelity, from 0 to 7 figures with no partners and no funding. The Art of Entrepreneurship is a show where we cut through the BS and dig into what it actually takes to start and grow a company. If you give me your time, I promise it won't be wasted. Now let's get to work.
Hello, and welcome back to The Art of Entrepreneurship. Andy, I am really excited for this conversation because it's something that I think about a lot as a founder. I think there is a belief in business that if you really want to win as a business, and if you really want to grow, you have to prioritize things like performance and speed of growth and results. And then as a result, the people come second. But I've seen that the opposite can actually be true. And I think that your company is a testament to that. And we're going to dig into that. At Excelity, my business, we've made decisions where we've prioritized people. And sometimes that has meant making less money in the short term. And that's worked. And I think that has to be okay. When I look at InCheck, it feels like you've built an entire business around great people, around culture, and a high level of trust for over 20 years, and I want to unpack that today. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so of course, before this, I'm brushing up on you, on the company, all of those good things. I read a story about how the company started on a little league field. Is that right? Tell me that story.
Yes, the company was started, I guess, technically on a little league field between little league competitors and friends that grew up together playing baseball, but also playing basketball and football and just sports obsessed kids that competed against each other. But along the way, in kind of competing against and with each other, one of my two partners, Adam, and I kind of realized that we had this chemistry that we knew we could win together. And so as we both kind of ended up in the recruiting and staffing industry after college, we came up with the idea of, well, we can start our own staffing company. And then shortly thereafter, Adam came up with the idea of starting up a background screening company. So yeah, our story is definitely rooted in our childhood love of sports and playing together.
You hear all the time warnings not to go into business with friends or family. I've done both myself. Mm-hmm. How did that work out for you?
Yeah, well, to make it even more complicated, we added a third friend to the mix. And so we actually, there's three of us. And he was also, Mazio has been one of our lifelong friends as well, also on the Little League field. So yeah, we added another element to that dynamic, and we've heard the same over the years. But no matter what it's been, whatever conflict has occurred between the three of us personally, or even struggles with work, you know, we've always put the business first and made sure that the decisions that we've made have always protected the companies. So it's like kind of like going through the ups and downs of life individually, but together and at different times as well. And so there have been struggles in each of our personal lives that have resulted in us, you know, sometimes being a little bit more disconnected from work, which, you know, the other two guys are then like, hey, what's going on? And those can be difficult conversations, but, you know, they have to be had. And, you know, we've weathered the storm and tough times, and we've always made it through. So
yeah, I was just talking to my co-owner, Jenny, about this too. And we've been working together for less time, but 11 years. And I feel like we are kind of growing up together too. And, you know, like going through relationships, getting married, having kids, and just like trying to support each other the best you can. And holding each other accountable at the same time. It is definitely an interesting balance to strike.
Yeah, sure. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a belief in business that we kind of talked about at the beginning, that you have to prioritize performance and growth in order to be successful. Mm-hmm. I was reading through your website and just from getting to know you all, I know that you've taken a little bit of a different approach, and I want to read off some things that I found on your website kind of as context for this question. I know that other companies in your space focus more on product, and you really emphasize relationships and personalized service. And your website says, "We're a customer service company that brings a human touch. Mm-hmm. Our culture uniquely sets us apart as a service-driven organization, and we combine our trademark human touch with expertise." Tell me about how and why you decided to take the company in that direction.
It's a great question. It's really relevant to our overall journey over the last 24 years. Not knowing anything about background screening when we started meant that we had a lot to learn. So when we started the company, the only thing that we knew that we could do was provide great service to our customers. And so we would do things like drive reports to their office and drop them off before we had like a software platform that we used. And, you know, this was our livelihood. So we had to make sure that every customer that we had was treated, you know, with, you know, like gold, right? So really just focus on the service side while we're learning, while we're growing, while we're building the business, before we ever wanted to get, you know, a ton of clients and then figure it out. I think it's probably been to our detriment in that we've talked to businesses in our space that have been around for fewer years, but have outpaced us in total sales and revenue. And that's okay. We heard from the founder of the software company that we used one time. We were talking to him about something, and he's like, you know, some companies are just focused on sales. And, you know, that's definitely resonated with us. And it's over the years, we've started to put more into our sales and marketing engine. But, you know, the company has always been about service and doing things the right way.
Yeah. And I feel that for our agency too. Mm-hmm. Like, there are faster ways to grow, and there are ways to burn people out, to lose customers and clients by focusing on sales and, you know, losing your customers out the back door, mm-hmm. because you're not focusing on retaining them. So yeah, that really resonated with me.
Yeah.
So I just listed off all of those phrases that I found on your website. Can you tell me what that looks like in practice internally within the company now? Like you said, you used to drive the reports to your customer's doorstep. How does it show up in the day-to-day work within the business today?
That's a great question. It shows up in the day-to-day work in a few different ways. I mean, the first is like when you call InCheck, you can talk to a live person. If you email our customer service team, you'll get a personalized response generally within like 15 to 20 minutes, if not sooner. And so those personalized service touches, I think, are what separate us from some of the enterprise big box screening companies, where instead of being able to reach out to someone, and the best relationships that we have are companies that view us as a partner, right? And they value the screening information that we provide. There's a compliance element to it. And so they look to us for, you know, partnership, assistance, and, you know, building the best background screening program. And so when we can really dig in with them, it leads to really long-term sticky relationships. And so, those are a couple ways in which, you know, the service element shines through.
Yeah. And those sticky relationships are what every company is really looking for. And mm-hmm. I think sometimes has a hard time figuring out how to establish, because your business is built on the idea of, I mean, companies come to you in a way to determine whether they can trust someone. Mm-hmm. And how has that shaped how you think about trust?
Yeah, that's a question that I've not really received or thought about in the past. And I think it, you know, the information that we provide just tells one part of the whole story.
Correct. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. What's your opinion on how companies build an environment where people feel trusted on a day-to-day basis? I know in your philosophy and like how you function on a daily basis as a leader, you really trust people to make decisions. And I suspect that's a big part of your culture as well.
Allow them to kind of lead their people and their teams, take their feedback, take their opinions, truly make them a part of what we're all doing together to make them feel like they have a seat at the table. Because if they feel that, then they're going to feel empowered to like really truly be a part of our success. And you know, that's certainly like when we feel like our people are really working like with our best interests in mind, it's because we've built that trust. Like they're kind of looking at the business the same way that we're looking at the business. And when we've achieved that, like it's just been amazing because we're just on the same page.
Yeah.
You know, and so like the team, the executive leadership team that we have today is just an incredible group of people that are tremendously hardworking, dedicated, but we all trust each other. And, you know, we believe in each other and we believe what we're doing, what we're trying to build it in check.
Yeah. It's like trying to get your team to have that owner mentality almost. And yeah. It's like not even an owner mentality over the company, but just ownership over kind of like your piece and, you know, like focusing on the things that you control and trusting that, you know, like leadership does want to hear from you and that you do have an impact and all of those good things. A lot of what you're describing and what we've talked through so far, like trust and the empowerment you put in your people, maps to what some people would call servant leadership. What is that? And how do you think about that philosophy?
Yeah. So servant leadership, I think like in our world for me is showing up as an employee versus a shareholder, and that I have a job to do every day and I'm contributing to the team as one part of the whole. And then as a leader, as a shareholder, I still have to provide leadership and work with our leaders to ensure that they have the resources they need to be at their best, to remove friction points within the business, be supportive for them, be sounding boards, be willing to roll up my sleeves and, you know, jump in to do whatever it takes without really having like a formal job description. It's just, okay, we need to do this. We do it. We get it done. And so, you know, I think it's just really that the mentality of being willing to do whatever it takes to, you know, help people out and just kind of being a part of it versus like always giving directives. You know, I think it's our job as owners, as leaders to kind of set the overall vision of the business, but like working with people to set the strategy within that.
It's like never asking people to do something that you wouldn't do.
100%.
Yeah. I can't remember what book it was where the CEO was talking about how like he wouldn't even ask someone to clean the bathroom if he wouldn't do it. And that's the like level of servant leadership that he practiced. I was poking around LinkedIn and I saw that you have been a referee for 35 years.
Yes.
That is incredible. And I know that that is a really tough role. I am a big NBA fan. I can't tell you how much time I spend, and I don't even yell at the referee that much, but there is a lot of referee yelling that is happening. How has that shaped how you lead?
Yeah, so the referee world, you know, I think to be a good referee, you have to get plays right first and foremost. To get plays right, you have to make decisions versus reactions. You have to have great communication skills and you have to have a strong presence on the floor so that when you blow the whistle, you look the part. And then you have to realize that like when you blow the whistle, the entire gym is looking at you. And so then you have to kind of be on point to be able to communicate like what has happened. And similarly, as a business owner, there are times in our company where, you know, I have to be in front of the business and deliver messaging.
All right, y'all, it's shameless plug time. I want to take a quick break to chat with you about Excelity, my full service marketing agency.
For the last 12 years, we've been working closely with B2B software and service companies. Now we are expanding and looking for growth stage companies with a bold vision, but maybe lacking the marketing strategy or resources to get there. Or hey, you might have resources that just aren't working out. We definitely see that all the time. At Excelity, our team gets results and we have a ton of fun doing it. I'm sure you can tell that from listening to this podcast. So if you or someone you know is a fit, check us out at excelitymarketing.com or reach out to me directly on LinkedIn.
Let's get into it more because I'd love to know about decision making. It has to be a role where like you have to accept that you're not always going to be the most popular person in the room.
Yeah.
And there's got to be a lot of parallels to being a leader, right? Mm-hmm. You're not always the most popular person in the room, especially when you're making decisions at the pace that you are. What has that taught you, like the referee role, about people not always agreeing with you and like its ties to leadership?
That's a great question. I mean, yes, in the referee world, like people aren't going to agree with you. In fact, there's a saying that like 50% of the people are only going to agree with you 50% of the time. And so I think like that speaks to the idea that like you have to be disciplined, you have to be consistent, and like you have to be mindful of the things that are happening like around you. You have to use all the information at your disposal to make the best decisions. And again, to your point, like you're not always going to make, like everyone's not going to be happy. But I think if you have like a consistent decision-making matrix and you like, if you follow that process, like over time, like people will see that like, okay, well, they're consistent and fair. I might not like it, but like I know where they're coming from. So
I think that makes a huge difference from a leadership perspective. I just had a conversation with a team member today and it wasn't the most enjoyable conversation I think either of us have ever had. Mm-hmm. And she did acknowledge, like, I know that this is fair. I know what the expectation is. I'm not necessarily in the headspace for this at this exact moment. And I'm also not trying to be a pain for you, you know? So it was a very like straightforward, we're operating, you know, off of the same set of rules and guidelines kind of conversation. I also, this is not a podcast about officiating in any way, but it is just mind-boggling to me, all of the decisions that you have to make. And I've never thought about the fact that you have to take into consideration, you know, like your partner and how they are officiating a game. Now I have more talking points for my next game with my husband.
I mean, so like to the point, right? Like if I let that play go and then the coach wants to ask me about it, I would say, well, coach, we just let the same contact go on the other end. I understand what you're saying, but like, here's what we just, like that makes sense. Yes. They might not like it, but they understand it.
Yes. You know, I just always see the players yapping at the refs and I'm like, that job looks really hard. Like power to you. That's really great. Do you have any like stories that you want to share, lessons that you live by that shape you as a leader or how your company operates?
Yeah. So the lessons that I kind of live by are pretty simple. My dad told me that if you're going to do something, do it right. And my mom told me, always treat people with kindness. And I've learned along the way to try to do the next right thing in every single action that I make. And if I do that over the next 1,000 small decisions, when it comes to the big ones, I should have trained myself to like try to do the right thing. So, you know, over the years of building InCheck, you know, doing it the right way and treating people with kindness along the way has landed us in a pretty good spot. You know, it's a pretty good formula. And so, yeah, I think that's really been influential in you know, my business journey over the years.
I think that should be in like the leadership handbook, the handbook that everyone gets on their first day. You've talked about people and culture being your competitive advantage at InCheck. How does that actually impact your clients on a day-to-day basis? Like, should companies be focusing on these things more, in your opinion?
I've always said that happy service providers are better service providers. And so I think going back to the kindness thing, right? Like, if we treat everybody with respect and kindness from our hourly processing team members to our executive leadership team, like they're going to feel like they're more like engaged, like they're going to feel like they have more loyalty to what we're trying to do because they're treated, you know, they're treated with respect. And so like one of our, you know, our pillars like early on was like not only, you know, based on providing great service, but like treating people really well that worked for us. And so, you know, over the years, like we've just had some amazing people, you know, walk in the door and, you know, those people delivering the service that we bring to our clients. I think our clients feel that. We've had stories of clients that have left for short periods of time that have quickly come back and said like, that's, it's not the same. Like what you guys do is different. So, you know, I think it's not for everybody. I think some companies still want like, you know, really fast, really cheap, tech driven, and we're a human driven business and we always will be, but yeah, we still do have to use tech.
Yeah. So. And that's okay, right? And that's okay for those other companies to be focused in that way. There are multiple ways to grow a company, right?
Right.
And that actually dovetails directly into my next question, my second to last question. I think in a space like this, and in a lot of spaces, right, mm-hmm. a lot of companies can feel different and you have to find a way to differentiate yourself. How has the human approach helped you show up differently in comparison to your competitors?
Yeah, I think the human approach has helped us show up differently in comparison to our competitors by allowing us to really make that as our brand. And so, you know, we tell the story to, you know, to our target client, our target audience, that, you know, there's tech enabled or there's tech first companies and there's human first companies, and InCheck is a human first company.
Okay. I talk a lot on this podcast about like the long game, just mm-hmm. the long game of entrepreneurship, of leadership. I think you have to stay really committed. It's about routine. It's almost about like reinventing yourself over and over again mm-hmm. if you want to stay in like the same position or a position of leadership. What has allowed you to stay committed for this period of time over 2 decades? And what is the biggest thing that you've learned about yourself during this time?
That is a great question. The long game is certainly one that we are in, being in year 24 mm-hmm. And starting at ground zero. And along the way, like reinventing myself has been a big part of my journey. And you know, that has definitely taught me a lot about myself. So then kind of pivoting from there and like meeting a coach that like encouraged me to like step into that leadership, which then led to me taking on the CEO position and really going all in. And so like, and making a lot of changes in my life personally over the years too. You know, it's definitely been like a process of reinvention. And I guess the one thing that I've always kept in my mind is like, always try to get better, always try to improve and become a better version of myself. And so like to do that, I've had to be honest with myself about where I'm at as well. And, you know, listen to the people around me that are giving me good advice and have kind of that personal board of directors that I can reach out to, you know, to kind of help me navigate, you know, where I'm at. Because, you know, as a business owner, like who's your boss? Like who are you getting your direction from? So like you have to have people in your network mm-hmm. that are willing to give you that feedback. And sometimes it's tough with my business partners being great friends to hear that from them. And so like hearing it from other people has been extremely important so that I'm not just listening to the voice inside my own head.
Yeah. You have to have your truth tellers. Yeah. And I think as you advance in your career, they become fewer and fewer, and it becomes harder for people to tell you, you know, the truth, or even just give you feedback or mm-hmm. feel like they can, even if you are receptive to it. Mm-hmm. So who are those truth tellers in your life? And are you actively asking them for feedback? And are you showing them that you're taking the feedback and mm-hmm. applying it to your life and growing? And yes, I think that's all extremely important. Okay, closing, last question. Do you have parting words, advice for listeners who may be experiencing some of the same things that we've talked about today?
Yeah, I think it is like being honest with yourself. Like, and if you feel like you aren't, then you need to figure out who you can go to, who are your truth tellers, like you said. And not being afraid to like ask for help, but like in our industry, like one of the things that we never considered was the idea of how much we could learn and how much we could grow by talking to our competitors. Mm. It's like there's so much like we can learn through partnerships with other businesses and by talking to our competitors, finding out what they're doing a little bit differently. Like people are willing to talk without it being like a threat to our growth or anything. So like we've learned a lot through that. So that's really been, you know, helpful in our journey. And I would encourage other business owners to try to do the same.
Yeah. There's so much more opportunity to collaborate than mm-hmm. I think most people realize. And people aren't actually trying to steal your ideas all the time. I think people are really scared of that. I'm like,
Yeah.
It's probably not as scary as they think. Thank you so much. This was a great conversation. For everyone that is listening, please share this with just one person that needs to hear this conversation, and we will talk to you next time.